have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, I see you every night, Bing, and I'll woo you every day. I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked out my windshield, and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied, and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down with three tough gals. From deep down Texas way, we got no pals. They don't like the way we play. We're a rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio. But you've seen my sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no laissez-faire. Here's what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down.
Corn, the revenuers came. The draw was slow, so now they know you can't do that to Maine.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe. Lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama. Lay that pistol down. Oh, singing songs in the cabaret, was I having fun? Till one night it didn't seem right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol
down.
Oh, pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a great new year and a fantastic weekend. Tonight, we have two wonderful mysteries for you, and then we're going to end on a little bit of levity with a little Abbott and Costello routine that was one of the ones they did on stage. And we'll finally end up with a good little song by Guy Lombardo about old records. In my life, I always enjoyed going through my old record collection and digging up all the gems that I could find. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and answer you. Hope you're all having a fantastic new year, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's enjoy our great shows.
Good evening now to the strange tale of a boy and his twin sister and their dog and the wreckers of Hurricane Cove. It's called Detour to Terror. And here is Mason Adams as Jerry Watson to tell you the story himself.
I had a strange, uneasy feeling all evening after Linda left to drive to Hurricane Cove. Somehow I had a presentiment of danger. Linda and I were twins, and always, in some uncanny way, each of us had been able to sense when the other was in trouble. Tonight, the feeling was very strong. Butch sensed it, too. He was only a mongrel pup, but he was smart. I shouldn't have let Linda go alone, but she had insisted. She was a feature writer for the Manhattan Magazine, and she'd run across the trail of a story about an old family of wreckers who lived down by the shore near Hurricane Cove. The tale went that this family had made a living in the old days by placing false signals on the shore in order to lure ships onto the rocks and then loot them. It was this story that she'd gone to investigate. Unwilling to go to bed with that uneasy feeling lying heavy upon me, I dozed in the chair by the fire with Butch's whine in my ears. It must have been a dream, because I saw Linda's white face floating in a sort of haze. And then I saw the fear in her eyes as she called to me.
Jerry! Jerry, help me! Help me!
I came awake suddenly with a cold sweat on my face. Butch was on his haunches by the fireplace, nose in the air and howling as if for the dead. I felt myself trembling. Linda in danger. Somewhere out in that storm, Linda was calling to me for help. She needed me terribly. Come on, Butch, we're going after her. Within 20 minutes, I was speeding through the storm out along Highway 9. I remembered Linda's telling me just what route she'd take.
See, Jerry, I'll go out on 9 to here and then turn off on the old shore road. It isn't used much anymore, but it's the shortest route to Hurricane Cove. And if I leave now, I should be there by midnight.
The mist lay heavy on the old shore road, and the rain drove against the windshield, and the swirling fog played strange tricks with my eyes. But I knew I was almost an hour behind Linda, and I had to make time. Now, don't worry, Butch. We'll catch up to her. We'll find her. I could only go faster. It's fog. I can't see 20 feet ahead of me. Hey! It's a red lantern on the road. What? It's a detour sign. Bridge ahead, washed out. Detour. What'll I do, Butch? How do I know what Linda did? Did she drive straight ahead or did she take the detour? I've got to know. I can't sit here waiting. We'll take the detour, Butch. And pray it's the right choice. This detour isn't taking us anywhere, Butch. I don't think Linda came this way. Maybe she didn't see the detour sign back there. Drove into the washed out bridge. Maybe that's what the danger was. No, she couldn't have missed that red lantern, even in the fog. She must have turned off. She must have come this way. Hey! There's the car, Butch, storming the ditch and blocking the road. It's Linda's car. Come on, let's get to her quick. Gosh, it's coming down and bucking. Never mind the lightning. Let's go. She's not in the car, Butch. I don't see her in the car. Oh, no, she's not in here. Linda! Linda! Where could she have gone, Butch? She was always scared of thunder and lightning. Linda! How can we look for her in the dark and the fog? What is it, Butch? What have you found over there? I'm coming, Butch, I'm coming! Where, Butch? Where, behind the tree? All right. Linda. Linda. She's not... Linda. Open your eyes. It's Jerry, Linda. Oh, Linda, don't be scared, Linda. Everything's all right. It's me. It's Jerry. Oh, Linda.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Oh, thank heaven. Oh, Jerry, take me away from here.
Sure, kid. Come on. Here, I'll help you out. Come on. My car is over this way.
I must have fainted. I knew you'd come, Jerry. I had a feeling you would. I was afraid it might be too late.
You got in the car.
Yeah.
Come on in, Butch. Gosh, you're soaked to the skin, kid. What happened here?
Well, there was a man. He was hiding up there behind a tree. The headlights caught him when I got stalled in the ditch.
How'd you come to land in the ditch?
Well, there's a tree lying across the road. See, look over there. You can just see it in the headlights.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. Gosh, it's a big one. Must have been struck by the lightning.
That's what I thought at first. But when I got out to look at it, I saw that it wasn't struck by lightning.
What?
Jerry, that tree has been deliberately cut.
Linda, are you sure?
Sure I am. It's been cut by a saw. The minute I looked at it, I realized it wasn't any accident. Somebody meant to block this road.
Great Scott.
So I hurried back into the car and I tried to turn around. I wanted to go back.
Well, you couldn't have turned around anyway. This road is too narrow.
No, well, I was too scared to realize that. I started backing up and the rear wheels landed in the ditch. And it was just then that I saw the man. He was coming out from behind the tree and he was all hunched up so I couldn't see his face. Then when the headlights struck him, he ducked back and he disappeared. Well, I was afraid to stay in the car, so I jumped out and I started to run. Then I could hear him coming after me. And I must have tripped and my head struck something. And that's all I knew till you found me.
Are you sure it was a man you saw, kid?
Yeah, positive, Jerry.
I don't get it. What was the idea of blocking the road? What's the matter, Bush?
He hears something. Look over there.
Someone running through the woods carrying something. I'm going after him.
Careful, Jerry. Look. Butch has that man by the trousers. Oh, he kicked Butch.
Hey, you don't just kick my dog.
Hey, be careful.
Come on back here, you.
Hey, I'm coming with you.
Oh, it's no use. He ran away in the night. Are you all right, Butch?
Look, Jerry. Whoever he was, he dropped what he was carrying.
What is it?
It looks like a big board of some kind.
Here, I'll turn the flashlight on. Yeah. What's the sign? It has lettering on it.
What's it say?
What's that? Great Scott.
What is it, Jerry?
It says, bridge ahead, washed out. Detour.
Jerry, this is the detour sign from the highway.
Yeah. They only put it up there to lure you onto this back road. Then they blocked the road with a tree. Kid, it looks like we're in some kind of a trap. We got back in my car, wet and shivering, Linda, Butch, and I. We tried to figure out what to do.
Don't you see, Jerry? This is the way those old-time wreckers used to work. They'd place false signals on the shore so that the ships would be lured onto the rocks.
Mm-hmm. You think that phony detour sign back
there... It
was
just like a false signal to a seaman. It lured us onto this back road. When they get good and ready, they'll come for us.
Maybe you're right, kid.
Well, Jerry, we can't just sit here and wait to be murdered.
Look, Glenn, up there in the hill through the trees. See those lights? Looks like a big house.
Hey, maybe they've got a phone. We could call the police.
And maybe...
Maybe what, Jerry?
Nothing.
You think maybe they're the ones who lured us here?
We'll have to take the chance, Linda.
Ground here is so soft. Isn't there a path through these woods?
There is. We could never find it now. Anyway, this is the quickest. There are the lights of the house up ahead through the trees.
They're such big trees, so old and bare. They look like evil things, like they're waiting to twine their arms around us and crush us.
Quit it, kid. You'll work yourself up for nothing. We'll be at the house in a minute.
What? What is it?
The lights, they went out.
The house, it's all dark.
Quiet, Butch,
quiet. Why did they put the lights out, Jerry?
Maybe they went to sleep.
What'll we do?
We'll go up and ring the bell. That's what we'll do.
Jerry.
What?
Do you hear that?
Yeah. Yeah, someone playing the piano in there. In the dark.
Oh, it sounds uncanny.
Come on, I'm going to ring the bell.
Piano stopped?
Yeah. I think I hear someone coming.
Still no lights. Gives me the creeps.
Someone's opening the door.
Good evening. Caught in the storm, eh? Won't you come in?
Your lights, aren't they working?
How stupid of me. I'd forgotten. Yeah. That better?
Yeah, yes, thank you. I'm Jerry Watson. This is my sister, Linda. This is Butch.
How do you do? My name is Considine. Gregory Considine. And you're quite welcome, I assure you.
Mr. Considine, there's been a tree cut across the road down there.
Tree? Cut? You mean struck by lightning?
Well, I don't think so, sir. I think it was done deliberately. I'd like to use your phone to call the police.
I'm so sorry. The phone is out of order. The storm, you know. I'm sure you must be mistaken about the tree. You must be soaked through and through. Please follow me into the library. I'll get you some dry clothes.
Jerry, did you see his eyes? He's blind.
That's why I was playing the piano in the dark.
Right in here, please. It's a nice crackling fire. You can warm up while I ring for my handyman. Matt will be here in a moment. I heard what you said to your brother, Miss Watson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not at all. I manage quite well.
You live alone here, Mr. Considine?
Just my brother Vincent and I, and Matt, of course. We seldom see strangers here. No one uses this old back road.
Mr. Considine, someone put a phony detour sign out on the main road.
Really? Sounds almost incredible. Ah, here's Matt.
You ring for me, Mr. Gregg?
Matt, this is Miss Watson and her brother, and Butch. They've been caught in the storm. I think there's some dry clothing in the west room.
Yes, Mr. Gregg. Yeah, this way, please.
Are you in there, Gregg? What have you done with those people?
Oh, dear. It's my brother Vincent. I'm afraid I'll have to ask a favor of you. Please overlook anything Vincent may say. He's, shall I say, a bit strange.
Oh, here you are. Well, introduce me to your friends, Gregg.
Go upstairs, Vincent.
Go upstairs, Vincent. Is that all you have to say to your brother? What are you going to do to these people? What are you planning for them?
Vincent.
You can't shut me up. Okay, mister. And young lady, take a bit of advice from me. Don't stay in this house overnight, or you'll never live to see the morning. Get out, quick.
Matt, you know what to do.
No.
Yes, Mr. Gregg.
No, please, keep away from me, Matt. Keep away. I warn you, mister, get your sister out of it. No, hey, let go of me, Matt.
Hey, he knocked him out.
I regret that it was necessary, Mr. Watson. Vincent is difficult at times. Please pay no attention to what he said. I'm very sorry that you had to witness this painful scene. Matt, please carry Mr. Vincent upstairs and lock him in his room. I hope you like these rooms.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, I'm sure we'll be comfortable, Mr. Considine.
They're adjoining rooms, as you see. And these doors bolt on the inside. I advise you to keep them locked all night.
We surely will.
Thank you for these dry clothes and for the tea.
You're quite welcome, I assure you. Now just try to get a good night's sleep. Everything will be all right in the morning.
Oh, Jerry, I'm scared.
So is Butch. And so am I.
What'll we do?
First thing to do is bolt the door.
blind. Yet he frightens me, Jerry. The way he ordered his brother knocked down. Jerry, there's something I've got to tell you.
What is it, kid?
The name of that family of old-time wreckers. It's Considine.
You mean these are the people...
Their ancestors used to loot ships.
And now they're working on motors. Poor Vincent tried to warn...
Jerry, what are we going to do?
We've got to get out of here before they come up to finish us off. Let's take a look out the window.
Oh, it's pitch black out there.
Blocked by the streak of lightning, did you see?
Yes, I did. That man, that Matt, standing under the tree with a rifle.
We're stuck. No escape.
What's that?
Someone tapping against the wall.
In there. Can you hear me?
Who is it?
It's Vincent. I'm in the room next door to you. It's locked on the outside. Can you get me out?
We'll be right there. Quiet, Butch.
Oh, Jerry, maybe there's a chance. If Vincent will help us.
Come on, kid.
Yeah.
No noise. Shh. Come on. Here, this is the door.
Look, it's bolted on the outside. They must keep them locked up all the time.
Well, here goes. Vincent?
Here I am. Don't make any noise. My brother has ears like a cat. And don't let him fool you. He may be blind, but he's more dangerous than any man who can see.
How are we going to get out of here? Matt's watching outside with a rifle.
Listen. The piano.
My brother is amusing himself in the dark. He always plays the piano when he has something on his mind.
Do you know any way for us to get out of here?
Well, there's only a slim chance. Now listen to me carefully. The only chance is to get out the back way. But you have to pass the open living room door downstairs. And Greg is in there at the piano.
And what do we do?
Well, you wait here. I'll go down first. See if they've left the cellar door unlocked. I'll come back for you. Please, don't move until I return.
Be careful.
Don't worry. I will.
Jerry, what'll happen if Greg hears him?
Greg will probably call Matt and then lock him up again.
And what'll become of us?
We'll worry about that later.
Jerry, he stopped playing.
Yeah.
Do you think he heard Vincent coming down?
Oh!
Oh. Jerry, Greg caught him. What'll we do?
Come on, we're going down.
The lights are all out down here.
I don't hear anything.
Where do you think Greg is?
Maybe waiting to jump us in the dark. Come on, I don't care. Stick behind me. We're going in the living room. Where's Butch?
I don't know. What is it?
My foot touched on a body. Then I'm going to take a chance on the flashlight. Stand by.
All right.
Great sky.
What is it?
Look.
What is it? That isn't Vincent. It's Greg. He's been stabbed.
Watch out. Vincent, somewhere around. He'll kill you.
What do you mean?
My brother Vincent. The one who's been doing the wrecking. We always keep him locked up. But tonight, he got away. Planted the detour sign. Cut the tree.
Vincent did all that.
Matt and I, we tried to stop him. Matt went out to the road, took down the detour sign. But it was too late. Watch out. He'll be back. He'll kill you.
He's dead.
Oh, Jerry. Poor Greg. And we thought of... Oh, the lights!
Thank you for waiting for me.
Vincent!
Where'd you get that rifle?
From Matt. He won't need it anymore.
What are you going to do?
What do you think?
You're crazy.
Well, aren't we all? Now, my good friends, if you'll just say a prayer... Any little prayer will
do. Don't point that gun at my sister.
It won't do you any good to stand in front of her. This rifle is a .30-30. Now, If you're ready.
Jerry, he's mad.
Look out! Butch! Attaboy, Butch! Let go of the gun!
The gun went off in his face.
Oh, Jerry.
Take it easy. He's dead. Don't look at him. He isn't pretty to look at. Butch, you did all right. No kidding. You can write your feature story now. The story of the wreckers of Hurricane Cove. And it'll be under your own byline, too.
Oh, I'm going to write it under a double byline, Jerry. The wreckers of Hurricane Cove by Linda Watson and Butch.
Valley 103.1.
Suspense. Present Mr. Ray Milland in Pearls Are a Nuisance, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
It's quite true, I wasn't doing anything that morning except looking at a blank sheet of paper in my typewriter and thinking about writing a letter. It's also quite true that I don't have a great deal to do any morning, but I like not doing anything. It gives me something to do. And I don't like telephone calls that interfere with it. That's why I have two telephones. One a public phone that I can ignore, the other a private phone. Which I'd better answer if I know what's good for me, and I do.
What'd you say, darling?
I said good morning, dear.
How are you, darling? Busy?
Yes and no. Mostly no. Why?
Somebody has stolen Mrs. Penruddock's pearls, and I want you to find them.
Stolen pearls? Well, possibly you think you have the police department on the line. This is the residence of Walter Gage. Walter Gage speaking.
If you aren't here in less than a half an hour, you'll receive a small parcel by registered mail containing a diamond engagement ring.
I'll tell Mr. Gage when he comes in. I went naturally. I even hurried. Ellen's voice has that effect on me. I think it's the way she says...
Walter, darling.
Yes, Ellen.
Mrs. Penruddock's pearl necklace has been stolen.
So you said on the telephone. My blood pressure remains normal.
It's a string of 49 matched pink pearls that Mr. Penruddock gave his wife on their golden wedding anniversary.
Only 49 pearls for 50 years of marriage? I wonder which was the bad year.
Oh, shut up, darling.
Yes, dear.
The worst part of it is the pearls are false.
False? Evidently, they were all bad years.
Don't be silly, Walter.
I have a very simple solution for you. Call the police.
Be quiet, darling.
Yes, dear.
The pearls were real enough when Mr. Penruddock gave them to her. The fact is, she sold them to an old friend of hers in the jewelry business, and he had copies made for her. Those copies had been stolen.
Ah.
She tells the police Mr. Penruddock's sure to find out she sold the real ones. So you've got to get them back, Walter.
What does it matter if they were false?
Well, she's terrified that the thief will blackmail her when he finds out they're only imitations. Mr. Penruddock might hear of it. The cat's out of the bag.
I begin to see what might be described as daylight.
Good.
But where do I start looking for these baubles?
I know who stole them. The chauffeur we had here a few months, Walter. A horrid big bruiser named Henry Eichelberger. He left suddenly the day before yesterday for no reason at all and without a word. I'm sure he stole the pearls.
How big did you say he is?
About 6 feet.
In that case...
Three.
Three? 6 feet three?
Three.
Oh, I'm sure he didn't take them. Couldn't have.
He tried to kiss me once, Walter.
Oh? He did? Tried to kiss you, eh? Well, where is this big slab of meat, darling?
Here's the address he gave when he first came here to work. Sounds like an unpleasant neighborhood.
Not half as unpleasant as it'll be for Eichelberger when I arrive. Tried to kiss you, did he?
The pearls are the important thing, darling. And be careful. He's 6 feet three, remember?
I find it difficult to forget. Eichelberger's address proved to be a seedy-looking hotel upstairs over a Chinese laundry. At the head of the stairs was a door marked manager. I rang the bell.
Pull up, bud. Roll.
I'm not inquiring for a room. I am looking for one Henry Eichelberger, who I'm informed lives here.
Down the hall, Jack, 218.
Have the kindness to show me the way.
Oh, well, what do you know? A duke, no less. Okay, your lordship. Pick up your feet, eh? This is it. He's out, eh?
Have the goodness to unlock the door. I wish to go in and wait for Eichelberger.
$2, and I won't even tell Eichelberger when he comes in, eh?
That is the deal. Here's your money.
Thanks.
If you hear any noises later on, ignore them.
Sure, eh?
I searched all the likely places where you might have hidden the necklace. Then I searched all the unlikely places. No necklace. Then I heard someone at the door.
How'd you get in here, sonny?
The explanation of that can wait. I am looking for one Eichelberger. Are you he?
Get you a real comedian. Wait till I loosen my belt before you make me laugh.
My name is Gage. Walter Gage. Are you Eichelberger?
Give me a nickel and I'll tell you.
I am the fiancé of Miss Ellen McIntosh. I am informed that you tried to kiss her.
What do you mean, try?
I hit him rather severely in the left eye. Then the right. Then I gave him a crushing uppercut to the jaw. He looked at me with an air of patient resignation.
Oh, well.
And then he hit me. Oh. I bent over and took hold of the room with both hands and spun it. When I had it nicely spinning, I gave it a full swing and hit myself on the back of the head with the floor. I believe I lost consciousness at about this point. At any rate, I was no longer aware of the time of day. While I was thinking about the possibility of getting back to my feet in the very near future, a wet towel began to slap at my face and I opened my eyes.
Atta boy.
The face of one Henry Eichelberger was very close to mine.
I thought maybe you was killed, Jack. You got a stomach as weak as Chinese tea.
Oh, what happened? As if I didn't know.
You tripped on an itty-bitty tear in the carpet. Feel like getting up? Here. Oh,
thank you, Henry. May I call you Henry?
No tax on it. You look okay now. Why don't you tell me you were sick?
Eichelberger, you swine. That does it.
Oh, cut it out, will you? You muss my hair.
I wish you'd fall down when I hit you, Henry. Just once. It would work wonders for my morale.
You and me could get along, Jack. Look, I never kissed your girl. Even if I ain't saying, I wouldn't like to. Is that all that's eating on you?
No, there is another matter.
Well, sit down and tell me the score. Only no more haymakers. They give me a headache. Promise?
I promise. Tell me, why did you leave the employ of Mrs. Penruddock?
Well, you tell me. Am I what you might call a good looker?
Well,
but don't
Henry,
soap me.
No. I wouldn't call you handsome exactly, but unquestionably you ate your spinach as a child, if that's a consolation.
Get you a real comedian. Wait till I loosen my belt. Look, suppose you fell for a doll with stars in her hair. A guy like me that looks like a taxi going down a street with both doors open. And suppose you get a job where you see this doll all the time and every day. And no, it's no dice. What would you do, Jack? Me, I'd just quit the job.
Ellen?
Yeah.
Henry, I'd like to shake your hand.
Go ahead.
Now there's one more thing. I am empowered to arrange for the return of Mrs. Penruddock's pearls, which you have no doubt stolen.
Oh, you got nerve, Jack. You think I stole some marbles and I'm sitting around here waiting for a flock of dicks to swarm me?
The police have not been told, Henry, and you may not be aware that the pearls are false.
False? You mean they're false?
Exactly.
And you think I would bother myself to hook some phonies?
You didn't mean to steal the necklace, Henry?
Now, look. If they was ringers, I wouldn't be bothered. And if they was real, I wouldn't be holed up in no cheap flop in L.A. waiting for a couple of carloads of bulls to put the sneeze on me. Would I?
That is exactly what I thought, Henry. Well, as long as you didn't steal them, how would you like the job of helping me recover them?
You kidding?
No, Henry. It's obvious that if you didn't snatch those marbles, I believe that's the expression, someone else did, and you can help me find him. Now, how about it?
Well, why not?
Why not, indeed?
You got any ideas where to start?
Yes, I have. I feel that we must, as they say, tap the grapevine. When a string of pearls is stolen, all the underworld must be seething.
Well, maybe you got right. But this underworld, it's doing all the seething, ain't gonna seethe much over a string of glass beads. Or am I punchy?
I am thinking, Henry, that the underworld probably has a sense of humor, and a thief who went to the trouble of stealing some worthless trinkets would be the butt of considerable coarse humor.
Yeah, there's a nucleus of an idea in that, all right. I would say something like that could get around the pool rooms and start a little wholesome chuckling, all right?
Yes. Now, all we need to do is to locate a reliable crook.
Yeah. See, there's a guy named Lou Scandese that runs the Blue Lagoon downtown might be interested in some marbles, but he don't like being asked questions.
He sounds dangerous.
We'll turn him inside out and take a look at his liver.
Very well. Let us go and beard this Scandese character in his malodorous den.
Yeah. Leave us do what you said.
Mr. Scandese's Blue Lagoon was not difficult to find. It was a rather soiled establishment, bathed in an unpleasant blue light. Henry and I went through a small, dim dining room to a door marked private. Wasn't it awful? We didn't even knock.
You, Scandese?
Who wants to know?
Me and my friend here wants to talk to you.
So talk, I'm listening.
It's about some pearls. 49. Is that right, Walter?
Quite right.
I don't think I heard about them.
Try and remember. Maybe if I pulled off one of your ears, it might help.
Oh, well, now, Henry, you seem to be doing all the work. Do you think that's quite fair?
Okay, Walter, you wake him over. These fat guys brew something lovely.
Look, take it easy. I ain't heard nothing. You guys insurance man, huh?
Give him our card, Walter.
This is my personal card. It has my phone number on it.
Okay, thanks. You may be surprised. You may get a call.
What do you think, Walter? You think this malevolent with us?
I dare say he wouldn't be above telling us an untruth.
Get you a real comedian while I loosen my belt. You giving us a straight good, Scandese?
Straight goods, absolute. We'll cooperate. I'll bet you get a call.
Okay. So long, Scandese. And keep your schnozzle clean if you don't want to be looking for it under your desk.
Yes, remember that.
Well, what now?
I think we've done an adequate day's work, Henry, and the procedure would seem to be for me to go home and wait for the telephone to ring, bearing glad tidings from the underworld.
What about me?
I would suggest that you wend your way homeward also. Here's my private number. Call me in the morning, after you do your sitting up exercises.
Get you a real comedian.
I went home and waited for the phone to ring. I must have fallen asleep after a while. It was quite dark out when the call came through. Well, here goes. Walter Gage speaking. Walter Gage, Acme Insurance Company.
Well, when did you become an insurance company?
Oh, it's you, Ellen. Well, why didn't you call on the private phone?
I didn't have the number handy. You haven't found the pearls yet.
How did you know?
We just got a phone call.
From whom?
He wouldn't say. All he said was he heard from somebody named...
Scandese?
Yes, that's it. That we were looking for the pearls.
Has he found out the pearls are false?
No, and I didn't tell him.
All right. Now, don't worry. We have an idea how to get them back.
We? Who's we?
Henry and me.
Henry? Henry who?
Eichelberger. I've hired him to help me find the pearls.
Are you out of your mind? Didn't Henry take the pearls?
Of course not. He only left because he was in love with you.
Oh, Walter. That big brute. How could you say such a thing?
But, Ellen, I thought you'd be flattered.
Flattered? I never want to speak to you again, Walter Gage. Goodbye.
Ellen! Ouch. Women, I sometimes wonder... Oh, honey, I'm so glad you called back. Now, listen, darling.
Who are you calling honey, sweetheart?
Who is this?
I'm mine. Your name Gage?
Yeah.
A guy named Scandese says you're looking for some oyster fruit. And a frail named McIntosh says you're the guy to talk to.
Possibly.
Well, I got 49 of them. Pink ones. $5,000 a price.
Why, that is entirely absurd. Those pearls happen to be false.
Quit your kidding. You heard me. 5 G's. I'll give you until tomorrow afternoon to scrape it together. Then I'll call you and let you know where to meet me.
Hello?
Ellen, this is Walter.
I told you, I never want to speak to you again.
All right, I won't speak to you. Just tell me the name of the man who sold Mrs. Penruddock's pearls for her.
Gallimore. Roger Gallimore. He has a jewelry company downtown.
Thank you.
Walter, darling.
How do you like it, darling? I went to see Mr. Gallimore. He was a tall, pink man of about 70, and he listened to my narrative of events with considerable interest.
5,000 seems like a great deal of money for a string of false pearls.
Yes, indeed. That, Mr. Gallimore, is why I came to see you. I believe I can hazard a guess as to the reason for such an exorbitant demand, and I further believe that you are in a position to confirm my impression.
And what might that impression be, Mr. Gage?
I believe that the pearls are in fact real. You were a very old friend of Mrs. Penruddock, perhaps even a childhood sweetheart. When she gave you the pearls to sell, you did not sell them, Mr. Gallimore. Instead, you gave her $20,000 of your own money and returned the pearls to her, pretending that they were imitations of the original necklace.
Son, you think a lot smarter than you talk.
Then I am correct?
Embarrassingly so, Mr. Gage. The pearls are real. Now, what would you like me to do?
Entrust me with $5,000 with which to retrieve them.
Son, it is so long since I heard anyone talk the way Jane Austen writes that it is making a sucker out of me.
Thank you, sir. I know that my language is a bit stilted. And so, Henry, Mr. Gallimore gave me this check.
You mean he gave it to you? 5,000 fish, just like that?
You have said it.
Kid, you got something with that daisy chain chatter of yours.
Thank you, Henry. At any rate, all that now remains is for the phone to ring. Aha.
You can say that again.
Aha. Hello?
Gage?
Yes, who is this?
Yes. You got the money?
It's in my pocket at this exact moment. If I have any assurance of honorable treatment, I am prepared to go through with it.
Okay. Tonight at 8 sharp, you'll be in Cathedral Park. You got that?
Yes.
At the end of the dirt road. Be there at 8 sharp. Come alone. No guns, no funny business, no smart work, no slip-up and nobody hurt. That's the way we do business.
Very well. Oh, one last thing. Where did you get my phone number? From Scandisi?
Who else? 8 o'clock, then. And no tricks.
That is very interesting.
What?
The telephone.
Yeah. Hooray for Alexander Graham. What's his name? But what did that guy say?
Hmm? Oh, yes. It's all arranged. I am to meet them tonight all by myself and give them the money.
All by yourself, huh? Get you a real comedian. Wait till I loosen my belt all by... They'll take the dough and leave you laying there bleeding all over yourself, and they'll still have the marbles. I ought to go with you.
Henry... It is my duty, and I must brave these monsters in human guise alone and unattended. Of course, I do have a big car, and you could hide on the floor under a rug.
It's a cinch.
But maybe...
Walter, the only thing wrong with you, as far as I can see, you got holes in your head. All I'm trying to do is keep you from getting another one. I'm going with you.
So it was settled. Henry was to go with me. That afternoon, I stopped at the bank, where I cashed Mr. Gallimore's check and changed it into $100 bills.
4,600, 47, 48,
you counted as though it were your own. 5,000.
5,000.
Now, a roll of quarters, please.
A roll of quarters, please.
There's an echo in here. I leave them in the wrapper.
Quite heavy, aren't they?
Yes, aren't they? So, late that evening, I found myself in Cathedral Park with Henry Eichelberg, a boy, in the back of the car. I was very nervous. I think Henry was also. Neither of us were any too sure of what was going to happen that night.
Oh, my back.
What's the matter, Henry? Aren't you comfy back there?
Oh, I'm comfy, all right. Only my heater keeps digging into me. Ain't we there yet?
We're getting close. Now stay down. This is business. This is the end of the line, Henry. Be careful. They're probably watching me.
Okay.
What's that?
Me, Walter. My gun is breaking my back.
Well, stop sitting on it.
I did. Anything stirring?
No. Keep quiet.
I'll make like a little mousy.
Don't you think we've waited long enough, Henry?
Well, we only been waiting 15 minutes. You sure this is the place?
Yes.
Let's get out of the car and see if anybody shoots at us. Then we'll know if somebody's around.
That seems to me the difficult way of finding out, but let's try it, as I personally feel sure that there is no one here but you and I.
Suck it. You know what happened, Walter?
What do you think, Henry?
It was just a tryout to see if you'd show. Suck it. I ought to go back and twist that scandeezy so he spends the rest of his life looking up his left pants leg.
Well, Henry, what is the next move?
Beat it on home, I guess. Anyhow, I won't need this gun anymore. My back is sore enough from it.
We stood there and looked at one another, Henry and I. He doubled his hands into fists and shook them slowly in his sadness. I, too, was melancholy. In the brief time I'd known Henry, I had grown very fond of him.
Yeah, that's it, all right. Nothing else to do but beat it on home, Walter. That's all is left to us.
I took my right hand out of my pocket. I have large hands. In my right hand nestled the roll of quarters I'd gotten from the bank that morning. My hand made a large and heavy fist around him. Henry didn't notice.
What are you looking at me so funny for, Walter?
I just wanted to say goodnight, Henry.
Huh?
You had two strikes on me, and this is the big one.
I don't get it, Walter. Oh.
He got it then. My fist with nearly a pound of metal in it caught him squarely on the jaw. For a moment, he wavered back and forth on his feet, then... Henry Eichelberger lay motionless on the ground, as limp as a rubber glove. I found the pearls twined around his ankle inside his left sock. Well, Henry, I said, although he couldn't hear me, you are a gentleman even if you are a thief. You could have taken the money a dozen times today. You could have taken it a little while ago when you still had the gun, but even then that repelled you. You threw the gun away, and we were man to man, but still you hesitated. In fact, Henry, I said, for a successful thief, you hesitated just a little too long. But as a sporting man, I can only think more highly of you. Goodbye, Henry, and good luck, I said. I put $100 bill in his chubby little fist and withdrew. End of story.
But how did you know it was Henry, darling?
You told me so, little lemon cookie. You were quite sure of it.
Well, I know, but you must have had proof of some kind.
There was one other minor little detail that convinced me Henry was the guilty party. I gave Scandese my phone number, but I have two telephones. One is a private line. Only two people had that number. You were one of them. Henry was the other. When Henry's accomplice got in touch with me, he used the phone number I'd given Henry, not the one I gave Scandese. You see?
Oh, darling, you're so clever.
Oh, of course. You may kiss me if you like. Months after Ellen and I were married, we received a letter postmarked Honolulu. It was from Henry.
My dear Walter, due to the bulls finally putting the squeeze on me, I have only just received the joyous tidings that you and Ellen are embarked upon a happy tide of holy matrimony. I am so glad for you. I often think of you, Walter, particularly with an overwhelming curiosity as to what it was you struck me with that night. Ah, well, I dare say it can only be conjecture on my part now. A hammer, perhaps. At any rate, I entertain no feelings of ill will toward you. On the contrary, I am indebted to you greatly. The ease with which you talk, Mr. Gallimore, out of $5,000 has changed my life. I have been taking English lessons myself, and am now practicing on a wealthy widow woman, not without financial success. Ah, toujours le sport. Devotedly, Henry. P.S. Was it perchance an anvil? I wonder.
You know, Henry wasn't such a bad fellow. All I really disliked him for was his barbaric English. Now he's changed that. Maybe I should have married him. What do you think, Walter?
Yet you, a real comedian.
Oh, Oh, this is wonderful. The woman I love living right upstairs.
Oh, stop, Costello. You're not in love with Susan. She's just a passing fancy.
Abbott, I wouldn't pass up anything that fancy. Gee, but I hope she likes her room.
Oh, she should like it. She gets bored with it.
I'm glad to hear that, too, because after all... What did you say?
I said she should be happy. She gets bored with the room.
If she gets bored with the room, then why did she rent it in the first place?
She's not bored with the room. She's very happy.
You just told me that she gets bored with the room.
That's right.
One of us is nuts. How can a girl be happy when she's bored all the time?
Look, she's not bored all the time. No. She only gets bored 3 times a day.
Where is she getting all that lumber?
I'm not talking about lumber. I'm talking about boards. Susan eats her board.
Who feeds her all these boards?
The landlady. Susan made arrangements with the landlady to eat her board 3 times a day. 30 days a month.
I'm moving out of that place.
Why?
That Susan Miller is going to eat me out of house and home.
Yes, and I'm just trying to tell you that Susan is very happy with her board and she likes her room. That room hasn't got a floor in it.
There's a cute kid. Just rented the room today. Already she ate the floor.
She did not eat the floor. I simply said there was no floor in the room.
You could be mistaken, you know. Anybody that will eat boards 3 times a day is liable to eat the floor and the doors and the windows.
Look, what are you getting so excited about? What business is of yours what she does with her room?
I'll make it my business, brother. Her floor happens to be my ceiling. I don't mind you knocking the props from under me every week, but I ain't going to let that Susan Miller eat the roof over my head.
Costello, you annoy me. All I said... was there is not a floor in Susan's room.
Just a second, Abbott. Have you been in Susan's room?
I have.
You opened up the door?
Yes.
You stepped into the room?
I did.
What did you step on?
The floor.
Ladies and gentlemen, this man has deliberately and with molasses up a thought been misinforming the public. I rest my case.
Yes. All right, Costello, there's no sense in getting yourself into a frenzy.
A what?
Frenzy.
I ain't make up frenzies with nobody.
Now, wait a minute. I'll try to explain by giving you an example. You have a floor in your room. The plaster is all cracked, so you have a floor in your ceiling.
I got a floor in my ceiling? How do you like that? I've been living upside down for 6 years and didn't know it.
Costello, you're all mixed up. I'm trying to tell you that Susan's room is perfect. It has no floor, and she's happy because she gets bored with the room.
Here we go again.
The reason why she likes to get bored with the room is because she's hungry after a hard day at the studio and rushes home and eats like a beaver.
Now he's got her eating beaver board.
Costello, I don't know why I get into these arguments with you. We argue and fight, and it always ends up the same way. You're just plain stupid.
I am not. I'm pretty smart.
Costello, if you're smart, I'm a monkey's uncle.
Well, I am smart. Now let me see you hang by your tail.
Get out those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. What if they sound scratchy? The tunes really were catchy, and especially those that said, I love you so. I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day. To get you courtable, I'd bring my portable and melt your heart away. With all those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. Those old
all the ones about
records, those old
all the ones about you,
records, the ones Kitten we used to play so long ago.
And the old wind-up
Victrola,
Barney Google was great,
the tunes, all the songs really about Kate, and especially jada, jada, those that said I love you so.
Yuck-a-hula, hickey,
I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day.
Meet me on
to
the
get
back
you portable,
songs,
I'd bring my portable
songs
and melt your heart away with all those old.
They were wonderful letters.
Those old
play them over again.
Records, the ones we used to play so long ago. The ones we used to play so long ago.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.